Bryant from the Cosmic Legends of the Universe, Dave Damaschek. The mission, to fight injustice, to right that which is wrong, and to serve all mankind.
Hi and hello, podcasters. It's your old pal Dave. Dave Damaschek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Here in Studio 66 in downtown Los Angeles, right across the street from where the Pittsburgh Penguins and Los Angeles Kings are going to get in on Thursday night, with Damaschek in attendance, I should mention. I did not make it on Tuesday night down to the OC to watch the defending Stanley Cup champions defeat the Anaheim Ducks. But as I say, I will be in the building right across the street here on Thursday night. And it's that time of the week where we talk college football. We'll do that in one second with AccuScore.com's The Blue Horseshoe. We do it. We've done it all college football season long. Why change that now? And a lot of you have been getting in touch and saying, Damaschek, what's in the future for you? The Blue Horseshoe says he has a big announcement that involves Damaschek, so make sure you stick around for that. Also, it's always a good move. Get on Twitter. Follow me at Damaschek on Twitter. That's a great way to see what's going down in the Czech Republic, so I encourage you to do that. Also, because it's 2 o'clock local time here on the West Coast, on Wednesday, Game 6 gets underway in the World Series in a few hours. Now, if you listened to Jonah Carey and I on the podcast yesterday, or if you've been following sports at all this week, you know Cole Hamels said that he was ready for the World Series to be done after his outing. I think it was taken a little out of context. Either way, sort of an inappropriate thing to say, even if it was taken out of context. Sort of not the greatest move. At least it's cast him in a negative light. Strange, because 1 year ago he was the toast of Philadelphia. And we talked to him just after he won the World Series and was the hero of it all. And so I dug that up. I thought it would be fun to listen back to that. We'll do that on side B of today's podcasting action. So make sure you go to 710ESPN.com, the Damaschek homepage, if you're interested in listening back to that. But in the meantime, side A will be devoted to college football talk right now with the Blue Horseshoe.
He's the Blue Horseshoe. He's the Blue Horseshoe. With his evil computers, he'll calculate who beats who. He's the Blue Horseshoe.
Yeah, that's right, everybody. He and his evil computers over there at AccuScore.com cooking up 10,000 simulations of every sort of sporting event under the sun. We always focus around this time of the week on college football. Here he is, the Blue Horseshoe. What's going down, man?
Babe, I got to tell you, it never gets old hearing that song. That song, for me, is like the greatest thing that's ever happened in my life.
what a sad existence you've had then.
Well, exactly. Let me articulate that point. It is like, prior to my my formal life as the Blue Horseshoe, I was publicist to Tom Green and Paula Abdul and sports were just my passion, and I was drowning in this world of crummy entertainment, and all I wanted to do was be the Blue Horseshoe where my sports opinion could be heard.
So, all right, so it's a funny thing that you've turned this into this passion into a business, but so you used to represent Tom Green and Paula Abdul. Who was more loco?
I guess in relative to the question, I would say that Paula was at the time, because I was in season one, and that was before the word was out that she was crazy.
Oh, you were actually with her during American Idol days.
Yeah, season one, American Idol, got some really good stories. That, you know, Paula was relevant and crazy, and we dealt with her being relevant and tried to hide the fact she was crazy. Problem with Tom was irrelevant and crazy, but thought he was relevant, and that also made for some headaches.
And funny too. He also, as we've seen with his big screen movie and so on. Yeah, what happened to that guy? As a matter of fact, I don't even know what's happened to him. But
he has an internet talk show, or at least that's what I was representing.
Well, that's what you say that with a sound in your voice that's condescending. But what is Damaschek doing right now?
Damaschek's broadcasting on ESPN.
That's right.
The man.
Wow. All right.
That's
what
Damaschek's doing.
All right, well, listen, so as far as that goes, do you want to talk about our big announcement?
I think that our big announcement should be dangled in front of the Czech Republic and not told until next week, but they should know that something good and in their best interest is coming their way soon.
All right, good. So we'll look forward to sharing that news. Been getting a lot of emails and tweets and so on and so forth. Damashek, what's happening with you? And the horseshoe says we'll address that next week. So we'll look forward to that. And in the meantime, let's yap about college football, your passion turned career. And let's start with this Brandon Spikes thing, the eye gouge, Urban Meyers, sitting him out for a half. How silly is that?
Well, what's great about it is if you think about what's worse, getting punched in the cheek really hard or having someone trying to rip your eyes out, one guy got 7 games. And
that's a great point that I really hadn't considered, how that compares to the LeGarrette Blount punch that started the season.
Yeah, I mean, the scorn of the nation. I mean, he had a full day of nothing but highlights on Sportsmanship Day about the guy that he punched a guy in the face. And then you have Brandon Spikes, you know, try to gouge somebody's eye out. And last year, you know, Spikes was really critical after the Oklahoma game, saying that Oklahoma played dirty. And, you know, there were a couple questionable plays from the Sooners in that game that I didn't really condone, especially when Dominic Franks tried to rip Percy Harvin's ankle off when he was already down. But, you know, I mean, it's the pot calling the kettle black, and, you know, really shame on Urban Meyer, and congratulations to the mainstream media to call attention to it. But, you know, I think it's an absolute joke that, especially in a game against Vanderbilt, that Meyer couldn't stand up and give the guy a proper suspension.
Yeah, he really, you know, it's funny. There must be something in the Gainesville water, or at least in the water cooler in the head coach's office on campus there in Gainesville. Because obviously Spurrier didn't have the greatest reputation for great sportsmanship, and it seems like Urban Meyer last year calling that timeout to kick the extra field goal, and you know, some of the deeds this season, the back and forth with Lane Kiffin, and now this. It really is ridiculous. The thing I will say is, I think I've mentioned this once or twice before, but, you know, the LeGarrette Blount thing, if you go back and you look at that, the punch, the guy's taunting him, so on and so forth, whatever, it was bad and he had to be suspended. But, you know, as he's leaving the stadium, as he's leaving the field, there are some students getting after him, too. And he tries to go after them, and he gets restrained by a couple of people that keeps him from getting into the stands. Imagine if he had gotten into the stands. It's Ron Artest again, except this is a college kid. What, I mean, the NCAA is puritanical as they already are. Can you imagine if a football player got into the stands and started beating up on some college kid?
I get the feeling that if he would have made it into the stands, he wouldn't be the one doing the beating up. I don't think that he could have beaten all those Boise fans. But I think the real question is not only Urban Meyer, you know, taking the cheap way out and only suspending the guy a half. It's, you know, you take a look at the SEC, which has been just a joke of an administrative conference this year. Mm-hmm. The fact that they've had blown calls in huge games involving highly ranked BCS teams. That clearly benefited whatever conspiracy theory.
Thank goodness
have.
No other conference like the Big Ten has such issues.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Chris Dufresne from the LA Times wrote a really good article about it on Monday about, hey, look, it's one thing to blow a bunch of calls, but how come all the calls that are getting blown are calls that benefit the teams in the top five of the BCS? Iowa last week, you know, benefited somehow from two blown touchdowns.
And let me just say, as an Indiana University alumnus, what's really crazy, and I know very few people care about this, but I'm saying it anyway, the Hoosiers just about had Michigan beaten. They just about had Northwestern beaten. And now this Iowa game, if you gave them, let's say, even one out of those three, they'd be a win away from bowl contention. And in fact, you gave them two out of those three, they're already bowl eligible. It's very frustrating.
Well, yeah, you got to tell them to stop blowing games. But, you know, I think the big problem that I had with that is if you do take a look at it, I mean, there was a horrible call in the Oklahoma State-Texas game that really swung the momentum that allowed Texas to close the door on Oklahoma State, a 14-point switch on a fumble that, you know, Oklahoma State had, where the referee said it was forward progress. They reviewed it. The reviewers, the replay official said he was going by the official saying forward progress, but the official didn't signal for forward progress until well after the Oklahoma State guy had taken the ball away from Kirkendall. So I think that, you know, combined with the World Series and some of these bad calls, people are starting to get agitated, but the SEC has also reprimanded Lane Kiffin this year several times, especially for the officiating. They blew the call in Alabama, Tennessee. They blew calls in Arkansas, Florida, enough where people had to be suspended. And now you have a guy committing a felony on the field, and mum's the word.
That's crazy. The other thing that stands out to me about it is Brandon Spikes and his older brother, Takeo Spikes. And it makes me think, you know, I don't think it had probably any psychological effect on Brandon Spikes, the parents naming one child Takeo, but that's a weird thing, isn't it? That if you're going to go zany, if you're going to go, let's try to come up with a really distinct, unique name for our kid, and you do it once with Takeo, but then the other one you go Brandon, who do you think feels raw about that? Do you think Takeo is thinking like, how come Brandon got a normal name and I'm stuck with this silly one? Or do you think Brandon feels a little raw, saying like, how come he gets the cool name? And you may as well name me Seth.
Yeah, see, that's the question. That's funny. That's the question I was going to have for you. Who would you rather be? Do you want to be Takeo or do you want to be Brandon?
I'm taking Takeo. You ask an interesting question, because if my last name is Smith, then I want Takeo. But if you go, if my last name is already Spikes, you don't have to try that hard to make that sound cool, you know?
You know what's weird about Brandon Spikes, too, is he has dreadlocks, but he has a receding hairline.
Oh, I haven't noticed that.
And like a comb-over. Like, he has an old Jennifer Aniston-like hairdo from Friends.
Maybe that's what the guy said to him. He said, hey, you know you have a receding hairline. He said, well, let me make it so that you don't have to look at it ever again. And he tried to take his eyes out.
Yeah, it would not be out of the ordinary for that to have been said.
All right, well, listen, Shu, we have much to discuss. We got to go over our picks here, and I want to talk a little bit about USC here. But quickly, looking at the BCS and how it stacks up here, I've bad-mouthed it. It's the annual rite of passage for college football fans. I've made my case about why the BCS is lousy. You know, everybody talks about playoff, or I always talk about let's go back to the old system. But it does seem like this season that we are going to get the two best teams. You know, they're going to be people, as there are every year. Probably TCU is going to be on the outside complaining about things. But as I piece it together here, I think we are going to see Florida and maybe Alabama, whichever one of those teams wins the SEC title game, playing Texas, and I expect it to be a matchup of two undefeated teams. And here's where I come up with that. Looking at their schedules, it's now manageable to look and see what's left and try and figure out where the danger zones are. Florida has their number one. They have at South Carolina against the old ball coach. That's scary. I mean, what a win that would be. That would be the signature win for Spurrier to knock off the Gators. That's a scary one, but South Carolina's fine, but they're not a particularly great team. And then Florida closes the regular season out against Florida State. That's a scary one again because Bowden, you know, all the controversy, and they've had some real stinkers out there, but they've also played well in a few games, some high profile games. So that's scary. I still think that they're going to come through undefeated. And then you look at Texas, what do they have left in the regular season? Kansas, at home, you know, in Austin, they're not going to lose that. The only scary one is short week of rest after Thanksgiving, the 26th of November, at A&M. That one, to me, stands out. How say you?
Yes and no. A&M's a really hard team to predict, but I think you can't make the mistake of saying that this year you have a collision course of great teams going to play in the BCS championship like you did the year that Texas played USC. I mean, if I were to do a little exercise with you and say, okay, let's say, you know, just flip the uniforms and say that Texas played TCU played a non-conference schedule of UCF and Wyoming and Louisiana Monroe, and Texas went to Clemson and Virginia and to BYU and had big games, you would say Texas undoubtedly is a better team. Texas to me is definitely peaking at the right time, and our computers absolutely support that. And I do think that they're among the three best teams in the country. But to simply discount TCU, anybody who is discounting TCU is doing so simply because of name. And I think that's unfortunate. If you might start matching up the schedules between the Longhorns and the other teams, on the upper echelon, I think there's a lot of, there could be a lot of raised eyebrows. And the fact that Texas, could have been construed as getting hosed last year, nobody's really going to play that card, and nobody really should. But I just really think it's unfortunate to discount TCU simply because they're in the Mountain West. I'm not so sure TCU.
Yeah, you're right. And they're out of conference schedule. You're right. Is it? It was really tougher than either Florida's or Texas's.
Well, they were tougher than most people's too. But you know, to me right now, the best team in the country is Oregon. Oregon is playing the best. They put the absolute beat down last week on USC. They're the hardest team to defend. I think that Oregon is the best team in the country.
You called that, and kudos to you for saying that. I took USC in that just based on Pete Carroll's big game success. But, you know, that I have always said that's what's great about college football, so I can't have it both ways. I hear what you're saying. I agree with you that Oregon is dynamite right now, but that's the beauty of college football is that every game matters. If you go to a playoff system, that probably, if you structured it right, would still be the case, but that's what makes college football better than every other sport is that from the first game you play, it matters. You cannot...
Well, that's a real travesty, too, Dave, is absolutely. But let's just say Oregon would have beaten Boise State at the beginning of the year. I don't think Oregon would get in over Texas simply because of name recognition and branding. You know, Oregon would have only had wins over, you know, over Utah. Somehow, some way, I believe that Mack Brown could make a non-conference schedule or make believers believe that his wins over Louisiana, Monroe, UCF, and Wyoming were bigger than Oregon beating, say, if they would have beat Boise State, Purdue, and Utah, and USC. And that's really what's crazy. I mean, last year at the end of the season, Oklahoma beat Oklahoma State by 3 touchdowns on the road. Texas beat Texas A&M at home. Oklahoma beat A&M on the road by a bigger margin than Texas did at home. But Texas gained in the polls. And I think that's where you start to, you know, go mad. So for the sake of a true craziness that regarding the Pac-10 getting shut out, it's almost good that Oregon lost early on in the year, because they would have been left out even though the Pac-10 is a superior conference to the Big 12 this year by the teams that make it up. But you know, we also think we've taken a look at the top 8 teams in the country and kind of did a cross section and a round robin, and Oregon is a clear number 4 team in the country.
Well, listen, I don't disagree with you about that, and I would be interested to know if Texas did have one loss, who would get into that game, you know, who would be higher in the BCS rankings, Oregon or Texas. But again, Oregon did lose to a good but probably not great Boise State team. 1 and 2, they almost lost to Purdue. And listen, those games count, so you have to factor them in.
They do count, and it's almost like the year that Joey Harrington was the quarterback who went to the Fiesta Bowl at Oregon, and several years ago when Georgia ran hot at the beginning of the year. It's so interesting that every game does count, because some teams need a preseason. Some teams, especially like an Oregon offense, they just clearly weren't able to take 9 months off and just come back in stride and just be that much better than their competition. But you now, as they've, you know, got the practice and they got LaMichael James, who's my favorite running back in college football, and they got Mazzoli, you know, running the zone read as well as I've seen anybody do it since Vince Young, they're the toughest team to beat. And what's good is if Iowa wins out and Oregon wins out, at least you're going to get a true 3-4 game in the Rose Bowl.
All right, well, listen, I hear what you're saying, but by the way, with Texas – so I mentioned they play Kansas and at A&M. Let's say they come through that unscathed. Who are they going to play in the Big 12 championship game? Who's there in the Big 12 North to play them? Is it Missouri, Nebraska, K-State?
Well, the question is, the answer is everybody's there in the Big 12 North. If you take a look at the Big 12 North standings going into this weekend, if Kansas should beat Kansas State, and I think they should, and Oklahoma beats Nebraska, and Oklahoma State beats Iowa State, which they should, you're going to have a 5-way tie for the Big 12 North. And last year when you got in a situation where head-to-head and where you had to throw out head-to-head, which you will have to do in the Big 12 North, you went to the BCS standings. But you don't even have a team that's closely ranked. I mean, the best team in the Big 12 North is – a 5-3 team, Missouri, who's 1-3 in conference, and the same could be said for Kansas. So it's an absolute mess. It's a debacle. And what's worse, the worst part about what's happening with the Big 12 North, and I can say this because I'm a Big 12 guy, it has no signs of getting better. I mean, Bo Pelini's not the answer in Nebraska. Iowa State's not going to do anything. Missouri's kind of peaked out. Colorado's a joke. And Kansas is playing with the same personnel for the last two or three years, and they are only regressing. And after going to the Oklahoma State-Kansas State game last week, despite the second-half fight the Wildcats had, Bill Schneider is not going to bring that program anywhere back to where they were in the late 90s with Michael Bishop. So you're going to have the same conversation every single year where some scrub team is going to get an opportunity to play for a championship, probably with three or four losses within the conference.
All right, so to me, the long and short of it is that unless something surprising happens, of all the games I've mentioned that Florida has left and Texas has left, besides playing Bama, presumably, in the SEC title game, the scariest game out there is at South Carolina for either of these teams, right? I mean, don't you think the Gators going in to play the old ball coach is the scariest proposition?
Well, prior to last year, South Carolina had always played Florida really tough.
Right.
Last year they didn't. Last year they got blown out pretty early. I'm hesitant to crown either Florida or Alabama because even though they're solid teams, they haven't shown it. They've kind of, you know, been a little hangdog versus where they were last year. Greg McElroy down in Alabama does not get me excited. I mean, I work for a stats company. We'll never get excited for a quarterback who completes 50% of his passes, and that's the case in Alabama. I'll always pick Tim Tebow over any of those guys in a one-game playoff because Tim Tebow is a winner, and I saw him do it last year against Alabama, and I saw him do it in the BCS championship game against my Sooners, which was he didn't win that game based on PR, or public relations, or ESPN vignettes. He won it because he was determined and had the ability, you know, to win. I wouldn't be shocked if LSU beat Alabama this weekend. I don't think it's going to happen. We think, we definitely think that, Alabama's going to win that game. And I'll give you a game forecast here in a second if you want. But I don't think those two teams are so superior to their competition that you can just, you know, go ahead and check it off.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. Well, what about Bama? That's the scariest team. Everybody, it seems like, I feel like at least my sense of things is everybody is now sort of like, all right, let's fast forward it to the Florida-Texas game. And I hear the TCU noise, and I agree with you that it's unfair, but at least you're going to have, if I'm right, you're at least going to have two teams that everybody circled and said, these are two great teams that should be undefeated playing for the national championship game. You're right, TCU is likely to be the ones aching from it because, you know, I look at it. Iowa still has, they've just gotten some calls. That's all there is to it. I do think they're a legitimate team, but they still have Northwestern at home, Minnesota at home, and in 2 weeks, they're at Ohio State. I think they're going to lose somewhere along the way there. I could be wrong, obviously, but I think they're going to lose somewhere. And I think Cincinnati is going to, whether Pike's in or not, Pike may play a little bit this weekend, but Cincinnati still has to play UConn, they still have to play West Virginia, and they close things out in December at Pitt. Now, if Pitt continues to play well, that's going to be a scary game. I say Cincinnati loses one of those games, too. If all these teams are undefeated, then it's going to be a mess as usual, and there's going to be tears flowing across the land about why does Florida get to play Texas and so on. But so, I mean, first of all, do you agree with my estimation that those teams have a loss coming?
Well, I would say that there's definitely a probability for those teams to lose, but I would say the point I'd want to make is none of it matters. I mean, Iowa's out. Iowa's going to be in a very tough situation. I don't see a way that Iowa
in the human pulse because of what people perceive to be, you know, luck or bad calls that benefited them.
Yes, and which is funny because they actually covered the spread last week. I mean, you know, despite what happened in Indiana, they were laying 17.5, and they covered.
That game is completely different if the Hoosiers get that touchdown and they go up by 21 points with less than a quarter to go. It does play out.
Yeah, but they did throw an interception. But, I mean, look, Iowa is in a really bad situation because they finished their season on November 21st. You know, if Texas wins out, and Texas will win out, Texas is going to be in. But Alabama has a really tough road ahead of them. I mean,
LSU, they're at Auburn, and then Florida.
And then they're at Florida. And, Mississippi State has proven to be a very tough out for Alabama historically. And they played an up-the-night game in Starkville. I mean, we'll just ignore Chattanooga. But Alabama, if they get to the SEC championship game, they're going to earn it, and I think Florida is a shoe-in for that game also. Cincinnati was the biggest loser of last weekend. When West Virginia got beat by South Florida, that eliminated Cincinnati really from any sort of contention, you know, where they would get shut out, where I even think a one-loss team would get in over them, largely because they only have one game left against a top-tier opponent, and that's going to be Pitt. If Notre Dame should happen to be Pitt, then Cincinnati's resumes within the computer is going to be terrible, whereas TCU is only going to improve because they play Utah, and I still maintain that Utah and Pitt, as it pertains to the computer perception, are a dead heat. So, you know, it's getting convoluted. It will be interesting to see. I still think that TCU will finish ahead of Cincinnati in the BCS poll. Neither of them will play for a national championship. But I think if you start to take a look at what the bowl projections are going to be, you know, I think you're going to get Iowa, Oregon in the Rose Bowl. You're probably going to get the SEC runner-up in the Sugar Bowl, and I think they're going to play USC if USC can run out, or they'll play the runner-up in the Big Ten. So you're going to get a really good game down in the Sugar Bowl. I think the Fiesta Bowl, because Texas would be playing in the national championship game, the Fiesta Bowl would most likely be Cincinnati and TCU, which would be a great game.
Unless Pitt beats Cincinnati, then it would be Pitt and TCU.
Exactly, but either way, I think that's going to be, the Fiesta Bowl is going to have that great at-large matchup, mm-hmm. you know, that great questionable matchup, but whether it be Pitt or Cincinnati, they would play TCU. And then in the ACC, you would, you know, you could probably have, you know, who knows who Georgia Tech would play down south in the Orange Bowl, because, you know, what, you'd have two teams in.
I'll tell you who. What about Notre Dame? You know they're going to love to put Notre Dame in there if Notre Dame loses, you know, maybe they'll lose one more game the rest of the way here.
Well, if Notre Dame loses one more game, they will not qualify based on their BCS standing to make it. I mean, they're 22 right now. And imagine, there's just not that many weeks left to go in the season. I think that Boise State, the Orange Bowl committee, could take Boise State because they would travel. And they probably have an intriguing matchup. I'm inclined to think that USC would get in as a two-loss team into the BCS because there's so much brand marketability. And if it's an exhibition game, I don't really care. I'd like to see USC play either Florida or Alabama in a runner-up game, as long as they don't go to the Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
I think the Fiesta Bowl will probably be the Big East versus TCU.
That'd be a fun one, yeah. So it sounds like the bottom line is, I talk about the quality of the matchups in the bowl games, and that's what seems like it's gone away over the last few years. It sounds at least like we have that to look forward to. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out how these teams are going to wind up. There's some interesting games. It's sort of a down week at this point in the season. You would think there'd be some marquee games, but there aren't really. But still, some significant ones. The biggest one is LSU at Bama. And so I'm going to get into my picks right now. And Bama is giving 7.5 at home to the visiting Tigers. Bama now, you know, as we go over these things, Bama knows it needs to win this game. LSU is playing for something, though. You know, it's not like they're out of, you know, it's perfectly reasonable that they could be playing. Well, I was going to say playing in the SEC championship game. Is it possible that they could be playing for the national championship? Is there any way by hook or by crook that they wind up in the title game?
It would be very interesting. I mean, bear in mind, LSU is going to have to beat Alabama, Arkansas, and Florida to do so. And they would beat Arkansas, and also, after Iowa's season ended, they would have wins versus Arkansas, and they would have wins versus, and they would have a win versus Florida. Looking at what LSU's computer ranking is right now, they trail pretty significantly in the computer polls. I think that Oregon would probably finish ahead of LSU.
Yeah, but now, I'm thinking about it now, though. If they beat Bama in Bama and then win the SEC title game against the Gators, then they would have to vault everybody. Unless the teams ahead of them are undefeated still, they would have to be at the top of that.
It would really be interesting to see how
they'd be ahead of both of those SEC teams, that's for sure. So it would probably be them in Texas.
I will maintain that TCU, Cincinnati, and Boise State, even if they are combined 36-0, will not play for the national championship this year. And that's my point is, if you are a BCS curmudgeon, that's the situation you have to hope for. You really have to hope for the Big East to, I mean, your Pitt Panthers withstanding, you have to hope that the Big East runs the table and gets completely shut out ideally by a one-loss team. That would be the greatest situation in really trying to shake up things with the BCS.
All right, well, talking about that LSU-Bama game, Bama really needs a signature win. The problem is they don't seem like they blow out, you know, halfway decent teams. It seems like they let teams hang around. LSU is playing for something. Lackluster effort in Death Valley a few weeks back. I say LSU plus the 7.5 going into Bama. I don't know. I don't know who's going to win the game. I'm inclined to go with Saban's boys, but I say LSU plus the 7.5 in that one. USC, we talked about there. Bloom is off that rose. How about that? Two losses now for Pete Carroll's boys and a bludgeoning too. They get destroyed by Oregon. It will be really interesting. Pete Carroll immediately after the game already starting to try and handle the emotion of it and what it means for the rest of the season, because he even acknowledges it's not arrogance. We haven't been in this position before. We're not used to getting beaten like this, having a couple of losses, getting embarrassed in the Pac-10 by another team. They're giving 10.5 at Arizona State. I say that they're going to cover that. I think that Pete Carroll is going to get the boys fired up to go out there and show that they're still a semi-relevant team. So I'm going to take USC there. Then you've got Ohio State and Penn State. Suddenly a pretty irrelevant game, even though two decent teams. Penn State with just that one loss to Iowa, and that must drive them crazy. I think at the end of the day, Penn State's a superior team. Plus, they're at home, -3.5. I'm taking the Nittany Lions there. Navy and Notre Dame hooking up. The Irish, as we always talk about, play everybody close, and even Wazoo. I picked that one. That was a good upset pick there. I told you Wazoo would beat that 27.5, and they did. Barely, but they did. I say Navy plus 10 in that one. And lastly, Syracuse at Pitt. Coach Wani, his boys are now all the way up there at 13th in the nation. I've been saying this is a scary game for Pitt. People are getting very excited about how good this team is. And, you know, I continue to lament the loss to NC State and think how much better they would be had they just won that game. But I think Pitt not only needs to win this game, but to be even more on the radar than they already on or they are. I think they need a signature win. I think they need a dominant victory over a crummy Syracuse team. I say they get it. I say take the Panthers -21.5. There are my picks for you.
I like all your picks. You know, some of them our computer disagrees with, and you have kind of a lot of funny lines with the 21.5. Again, remember what we said about the extra half point is actually right. An extra possession, and but I think for the most part your picks are good and conservative, and you're picking the good teams. I think USC has a lot to play for this week because they're playing for a BCS. We'll be interested to see what happens at night. Arizona State does have a good defense and plays better at home.
And by the way, let me interrupt you. I think USC must be actually excited. There's been a fair amount of noise in Los Angeles that USC is tired of going to the Rose Bowl every year. I know that's ironic, and teams like Arizona and Oregon State would love to have that problem. But, you know, they're in L.A. They'd like to travel somewhere. So they maybe on some level they're kind of like, hey, cool, we'll get to, you know, go check out some new scene.
Well, I mean, it's weird. I mean, USC is a really big wild card this weekend. You don't know what a team like that, how they're going to recover. I mean, their season's over for what their goals were, which was Pac-10 and national championship. That's just not going to happen. And they have a lot of tough games left, too. I mean, they could conceivably, you know, finish with 3 or 4 losses in the conference because they play, you know, they do play Arizona. And, you know, this week, Arizona State's a very game opponent. I don't think USC will end up with 4 losses, and I'm kind of hopeful that they do run out because I'd like to see them in the BCS because they are good television. But also, should USC lose another game, this Ohio State Penn State game this week is for a BCS bowl because they would be the next game to replace USC. So when you start talking about just brand recognition, it's going to be a very big deal whether USC would get in or the winner of Ohio State Penn State. By the way, your Ohio State Penn State pick, we have 60% supporting that in your favor.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Buckeyes, then after that game, they turn around and host Iowa. So an interesting couple of games there for Terrell Pryor and company. So, all right, Shu, lay your picks on us. What'd you go last week, by the way? I went 3-2.
I got roughed up. I went 1-4 last week.
Oh, 1-4. Egad. Well, Damashek closing the gap, and you can take a look at that at 710ESPN.com, the Damashek homepage. Our picks are up there near the top of the page. The Shoe still riding high, somewhere in the hitting 55%. About 55% range?
Yeah, I came back down to earth last week, and you know, there were some games where literally I just thought, you know, it was done. And I got roughed up, but I did at least hit the one that I was most passionate about, which was the Oregon game. So my pick number one is...
That was your shoe-in, then, of the week, as
you say. That was my shoe-in. It's easy. You know, isn't it fun how it's easier to call it the shoe-in after the fact?
Yeah, it is, especially since beforehand you say, I don't feel more strongly about one versus the other. I feel equally, I feel the same about all these picks. And then after the fact you say, that was the one I most, I felt the strongest about.
Well, if you look at my personal spreadsheet, you would see that at least I'm not lying. You know, so my first pick of the week is Oklahoma State -7.5, you know, against Iowa State. You're getting 60.2% against the spread on the AccuScore computer. AccuScore is 7-0 in their pick in games involving Oklahoma State this year. You know, I still think Oklahoma State's a very solid team. They're designed to score a lot of points. Iowa State's still kind of living large based on, you know, the fact that they were able to get 8 turnovers, 4 for them inside the 5-yard line against Nebraska. Nebraska proved last week that they're just not that good of a team, blowing a 20-0 lead in the first half against Baylor, eventually not covering. I like the Pokes to go in there to win by probably about 3 or 4 touchdowns even. 7.5 points is an easy number for me to lay. I don't mind laying the bonus possession. The next pick is one that's kind of supported by the AccuScore computer. I'm going to stick with the Cheating Ducks, laying 6.5 against Stanford, 60.2% in the AccuScore computer. Yeah, the Ducks go on the road, and they're certainly not the same.
What'd you call them, the Cheating Ducks?
The Cheating Ducks.
Why do you call them the Cheating Ducks?
Because they cheated Oklahoma as badly as you can get cheated.
Oh, my. Oh, people accuse me of being biased. That was 3-4 years ago. I really was thinking, what? Cheat? When was that? When did this happen that they were accused of recruiting violations? All right. Let's.
No, they're just getting awarded victories.
That was the referees who gave it to them. They didn't cheat. All right. Continue, please.
I still don't like Mike Bellotti because he refused to acknowledge it. Anyways. I'm gonna lay the 6.5 with Oregon. I love Masoli. I love their running back, LaMichael James. I mean, he's my absolute favorite. I think this is the sort of game that even if it's close, that it would not, if Oregon wins, they could win by 7 or 8 points. And the fact is, the number is under 7, and I like that. AccuScore's combined record in Stanford and Oregon games this year is 10-6, which is encouraging. And we're 15-9 in our, Pac-10 picks. My, third pick, I have 4 picks this week. Mm-hmm. You know, my third pick is the Miami Hurricanes laying 13.5, getting 58% with the AccuScore computers against Virginia. I think Virginia is awful, and I think you have a really big talent discrepancy in this game. Even though Miami, you know, really played poorly coming out of the gate last week, falling down 17-0 to Wake Forest, which I believe was one of my picks, I don't think that hangover is going to last another week. I like Miami laying the points. We're 16-11, by the way, against the spread in ACC games. And I'm going to go ahead and say it, Dave. I have my most confident pick of the season.
Oh, wait a second. This isn't just the shoe-in of the week. This is the blue horse shoe-in of the season.
Yes.
Wow, I can't wait to hear it. Wait a second. This deserves a drum roll here. All right, go ahead, Shoe.
Houston +1 at Tulsa.
There you go. I'll tell you, it's funny. You latch on to a certain team, just like you did last year. You love Ball State and Tulsa. This year, you love that Houston team.
Well, yeah, because I love teams that can score points. But I also will tell you that in my private equity fund, you know, I played Tulsa last week and literally watched SMU just dominate them. Tulsa couldn't score. They couldn't move against an SMU team that was dominated by Houston. I love Kevin Sumlin. I love Case Keenan. I love the way they play football down in Houston. I'd be even willing to lay up to a touchdown in this game, and the fact is I'm getting 1 point. You know, and it's one of these situations where I know Vegas probably is saying that, you know, they know something, but I took a look at what our record is with Tulsa, and we're 3-4 within our games where Tulsa played. And the fact is it's one of those rare times where I'm encouraged by the fact that we have a losing record with them, because I understand that our formula is very similar to the Vegas formula in simulating games and developing a line. And when that happens, it shows me that Tulsa continually does not play up to their ability and to their skill set. You know, they might start out fast, but if you saw what Houston could do last week against Southern Miss, and what they've done throughout the season. They threw out one clunker. This is a game where they play have an equal size advantage. They can run the football, Houston can, and they're playing against guys that are physically to the same size as them. I think you have a huge talent discrepancy. I'm very keen on the Houston Cougars this week.
All right, solid gold there, Shu. We'll see how it turns out for you and for Damashek, and we'll look forward to yapping with you next week. And like we said, you'll have a big announcement, and it involves Damashek, and the Czech Republic will be pleased with this news.
I'm very excited to not only give that announcement, but hopefully we can get the Shu and pick of the year right, which so I don't have to take a browbeat again.
All right, yes, that would be a shame. So, all right, listen, so we'll look forward to yapping with you then. In the meantime, enjoy your weekend of college football, Shu. And go to AccuScore.com to get your picks, not just the Shu's picks, but the what the evil computers there cooking up those simulations have in college football, NFL, and beyond. All right, Shu, we'll talk to you.
Sounds good, Dave. Thanks a lot.
All right. There he goes, everybody, the Blue Horseshoe. One more time, AccuScore.com, the place to go to see 10,000 simulations of every sporting event. Really helpful during football season, World Series action. And speaking of the World Series, I don't know if there's going to be a Game 7 or not. Either way, I mean, you know, the idea that it might be Cole Hamels out there on the hump is pretty compelling. About a year ago, just about almost to the day, we talked to Cole Hamels, like I mentioned, and so I thought it might be a fun treat to listen back to that 1 year removed when he was the toast of the town then. Now a lot of Philadelphia fans, kind of upset with Cole Hamels. So I thought that would be an interesting thing to listen back to. So flip it on over to side B and you can track that down at 710ESPN.com, the Damashek homepage. And, otherwise, thanks so much, podcasters. It's been a thin slice of heaven.
Damashek! Damashek!